Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Hello and welcome back to the OMG MotoGP podcast, where we chat all things about the fastest two-wheeled motorbikes in the planet. The 2024 MotoGP season has officially started. I'm your host, Renita, and as always, joined by Keith. And before we get into our Qatar debrief, Keith, you recently sat down with a very special guest. So guys, I want to take you to our interview with Michael Laverty.
Michael, good to see you. Nice to see you at home for a change. That's a fairly rare item, isn't it, being at home?
It's been nice, actually. I've spent a lot more time at home through the pre-season than I have done recently. So working from home's good. Obviously, post-COVID, we've got used to it. But as you mentioned, I've been traveling a lot the last couple of years since I set up the team and everything with what's going on behind the scenes. But yeah, nice to be home.
Let's take a look at Qatar, shall we? The first round this year. I mean, obviously, there's all the speculation and all the predictions about what's going to go on. Qatar has changed hugely. The whole place is now a completely different kettle of fish. It's almost within the city boundary now, whereas it used to be right out in the desert. What was it like when you rolled up there this year?
Yeah, honestly, it's such a nice environment they've built in the paddock. Obviously, it was when it was originally built, the circuit was so remote, distant from Doha. Now Doha, the city itself, has grown to the boundaries of the circuit, and it seems to be growing even further. But the recent renovation of the paddock puts it, the best in the MotoGP arena. It is going Formula One-esque in terms of the image, how the pit boxes are built, even the offices behind the scenes for the teams and riders. It has a nice feel to it. And welcoming, it's a very welcoming paddock. Still not got the footfall that you would hope for. It doesn't drag that many fans there. There was a few from the UK visiting, and they commented as well that it's so quiet here. You do get access to the riders and a little bit more behind the scenes than you would do if you visit a European race and you get a paddock pass. You might not see too much where the riders go motorhome to the garage and then back again. Whereas here, it is quite a relaxed environment. It's a nice place to be to have the season opener.
Every cloud has a silver lining, of course, for the likes of you that times his life by the second. Getting out of there on a Sunday night is quite easy to get to the airport, and you can get home by Monday morning.
Yeah, one of the few races, actually, even though we finish later than we would normally in Europe, but you can get easy access, we were on a 1:50 flight overnight back into Heathrow at 6:35 yesterday morning. So yeah, perfect to be back on a Monday morning when possible.
Let's talk about Moto3, Moto2, but first of all, if I can, let's talk about MotoGP, Moto Grand Prix. It just doesn't seem to be quite the start to the year that some of us were expecting. For sure. I'm wondering, from your technical expertise, and you are quite analytical on these kind of things, whether aero and launch control and all these things has actually pulled MotoGP back into the sort of Formula One arena, if you like, where there isn't that much passing. And even with the expectation of a great race, and we really had it all, I really was expecting something fantastic this week, it isn't as good as Moto 3 or even Moto 2 at the moment, because we just don't see the passing. Is that because riders and these bikes, as they are at the moment, can't make those passes?
Unfortunately, that seems to be the case. So we hyped up the potential battle because we've so many contenders lapping at a similar pace. So all of a sudden on paper, you've got 10 potential race winners and you think this is going to be a fantastic race. But unfortunately, it ends up almost like a time trial. So the rider who leads halfway around lap one, they have control of the destiny of the race. So the rider ducking in behind will overheat their front tire if they're too close, and they need to immediately make an overtake. And it's so difficult because the braking zones are less. They're coming in faster. They're stopping quicker because the bike's lower. It's more stable with all the aero. So the window to make an overtake on the brakes has sort of gone. So you almost need a mistake for a rider to go in a little hot, as we've seen riders running off track at the fast right-handers and nipping up the inside. So it wasn't the classic. I don't think it'll be the case at every race, but it wasn't the classic MotoGP that we wanted, where there were lots of overtaking opportunities. Qatar as well is unique in that the riders have a pre-season test there, so they've really got the bikes dialed. So the scenario when you're in Europe and you only have a Friday morning session that is free, then Saturday afternoon, although it's got a window there where you can work on setup, but it generally the last 15-20 minutes are qualifying through to Q2, so it's a pre-qualifying session. Sometimes weather interrupts, so you arrive with a few more question marks on Saturday afternoon for the sprint, whereas now these guys had everything dialed. And it is, aero's a problem. I think lowering devices as much as aero, because you're never putting the aero back in the bottle. The genie is out. Whereas lowering devices could be banned, and I think that would help the tire pressure scenario. Aero's obviously going to put a big load in it, but Michelin are bringing a new front tire that hopefully will cope with those aero loads in the future. But yeah, something will change. I'm almost sure of it when the rules change in 2027, but we've got a long time until the next generation of MotoGP rules evolve. So we hope the Michelin front will fix it for 2025, and that it's not the first answer on the riders' minds after they finish the race that front tire temperature went too high, couldn't overtake, couldn't stay in the slipstream. I loved seeing a rookie like Pedro Acosta just making those overtakes, just staying in the draft, and that was the racing that you want to see. But he learned from his mistakes, and he won't do that in future. He'll sit out of the draft, he'll make his passes whenever he can on those key moments. So yeah, it becomes a little bit more strategy involved, which is a very Formula One thing, and not something we want our sport to go down that route.
Well, you mentioned Pedro Acosta, and it was a bit of a disaster for him. He was the exciting mover and shaker early on, and you're right, he just burnt his tyres out and he ended up where he ended up. Of course, the other big name that comes to round one was Marc Marquez on the Gresini Ducati for the first time as well, in a race for the first time. He might have benefited, it looked to me, from where I was watching, from Rael Fernandez having the problem that he had on the new Trackhouse bike when they delayed the start, because it looked like, you mentioned the ride height adjustment, it looked as if Marquez had got a problem with his ride height adjuster at the start, the original start as it was to be.
Yeah, I seen Frankie Carcetti denied that one yesterday on Twitter when asked the question. But yeah, the problem is they're quite complicated when they roll up on the grid to get the front of the bike down, the rear of the bike down, engage your launch start device in terms of the limiter and torque control that the engineers have programmed in there. And if it doesn't work, then they're pretty difficult to start and can be dangerous, as we've seen in some instances where the lower device is stuck down. So yeah, Mark may have had a little bit of luck on his side there if that was the case that he was having issues. But yeah, it's something that I think has safety grounds in terms of when they reevaluate the rules to throw out the lower device because of these issues that happen on the grid.
Any surprises to you? I mean, anything that was unexpected over the weekend, apart from the weather, of course, on the Friday, which may again, you talked about they may well have tested there, but of course the track changed hugely from day one. When we had a lot of rain, it does put the old MotoGP boys off a bit, doesn't it? Because their test session really is down to the second. Everything is pre-planned to get to the race on Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah, exactly. And on a weekend such as you normally get in the desert, you don't ever anticipate. So even how you manage your tyre allocation, you're always thinking you're going to use those extra tyres on a Friday afternoon. So yeah, they had to go back to the drawing board a little bit. I do think that there wasn't too many surprises. I think we all expected Ducati to be strong. We expected Aprilia to be there and KTM as well. the Japanese manufacturers have moved closer. There's no doubt about that. But unfortunately, the bar's been raised again by the Italians and the Austrians. So the game's ever-evolving. I think Brad Binder was really impressive. I'm slightly, I know it's only round one, but slightly worried for Jack Miller. He's fast and he's there. He does a great job for KTM. But the problem is when you have Pedro Acosta coming into their umbrella, although it's a KTM-branded gas-gas, it is... It's worrying for Jack's future because there's a lot of Moto2 riders looking those seats, and you know a few riders will be feeling the pinch. So I think there's such a high level in MotoGP right now. It's going to be a difficult season all round. I think we're going to have Aprilia's at the match some weekends. Maybe it doesn't look like they fixed everything in terms of the consistency over 21 rounds. I think Ducati have that dialed, and KTM are inching closer, and now they've got two contenders in Pedro Acosta and Brad Binder, and I think Jack will have some strong weekends in there too. So it's the cards are falling how we sort of predicted. I think Ducati have now got even better at evolving their bikes year on year, where Gigi was confidently saying ahead of the weekend that we know these parts are going to work. It's no longer a guessing game. The mathematics and the engineering that goes into it, there's no longer a roll of the dice. They calculate exactly what they need to improve, and they know how to do it.
In your opinion, and from what you're seeing at trackside, the concessions, the new concession rules, which are brilliant. I mean, I think they had to do it, and they've done a good job as far as I'm concerned, rules-wise. Can you see Honda and Yamaha, particularly Honda, but Yamaha maybe, can you see them making any step during the course of this year?
I do. I'm a fan of the concession rules, and I do see already there's progress from Honda. I think... It's going to take a little bit of time. Listening to Johann Zarco speak, the engine's strong, the front end's better, grip's not there. They have enough tires in their allocation now to test with Zarco, with Marini, with Mir, with Nakagami. So they'll have their riders on track alongside Stefan Bradl and the Japanese. They will come up with a new aero body, which they'll be able to introduce. They'll be able to adjust the engine specification throughout the year. So they're no longer tied as they previously would have been. So their evolution will continue throughout the season. They'll get closer. I don't see them overtaking any of the European manufacturers this year, but if they put their riders into the mix to challenge them in year one of the new concessions, that will be a result. Yamaha, again, very similar story in terms of the progression is there. You can see it, but there's still that little bit of drift. And it is a second race where they're not massively that far behind on a per lap, but it ends up 11, 12 seconds back at the end of the sprint. And you're thinking you're just not quite there to challenge the European manufacturers, and it is ex-world champions Juan Mir and Fabio Quartararo battling with their Japanese stablemates. So yeah, the Japanese manufacturers are making inroads. They're changing how they work, they're changing crew, they're pinching engineers from other manufacturers, which is something they didn't previously do. So I think their way of working that worked for two decades or more in terms of how they developed and how they brought parts to the track, they've had to change that. The dynamics that the Italian and Austrians have brought, where they engineer something, they bring it to the test bed, and then they put it on track and bring it to a race within a 3-4 week period. That's something the Japanese don't do, but they're starting to now.
It's not an easy arena anymore, is it? There, if it ever was, the fact of the matter is everything is so close. The problem is, I suppose, as well, is all these manufacturers make power or make grip or make differences in different places on the racetrack, and it's where the majority have the most advantage, which is Ducati at the moment in most places. We've seen Yamaha that's a bit faster now than it's ever been, but it's still not playing to its own tune when you're in a group of motorcycles. I think it's difficult for people to understand that it's all very well doing one lap, isn't it? You get a fast time one lap when you're left alone to pick your own line, your own braking points, your own acceleration points and so on. But as soon as you've got a whole load of fast motorbikes around you that are miring effectively your corner speed, mid-corner speed, whatever it might be, that's where the Japanese manufacturers seem to be at sea.
It is a case of, well, especially Yamaha, because they are the only inline four manufacturer having the four cylinders across the frame. It gives them a strength, especially as you mentioned, the chassis rideability and the feeling they have to carry a high corner speed. Flowing lines, which worked so well for, well, Valentino Rossi, Jorge Lorenzo, Maverick Vinales for a number of seasons, it can deliver results. But when you're mired into a group of 300 horsepower Ducatis, you've got eight of those around you, you've got Aprilias up there with horsepower KTMs as well, you can't run your own lines, you can't ride your own race, you can't take advantages from the package you have. So It is changing. I don't think the inline four is dead yet. I do think there's still ability from how the engine creates grip, how the chassis creates grip, and I think grip is the key right now. Using the spec tire, you know, everyone's on the same rubber, so learning how to extract the maximum to get the propulsion off the corner, whether that's with the lower device, with a smoother torque model or a smoother engine character combined with your aero, not letting the bike pivot and wheelie, and getting the maximum acceleration off the corner. That's where Ducati do it so well. That's what KTM still can't match Ducati in that arena. They have such a high horsepower engine, but they put it to the ground like it's a little Moto 3 bike. Initially, the first touch of the throttle is so soft, the riders feel the grip, the traction, and they just launch off the turn, and the front wheel hovers off the ground a couple of mil, just fork extension is perfect. They've got it all dialed in, and it just works, and it makes it look physically easier for the rider, but you can see how they leap off the turn. It's impressive to watch.
But it's a long season, and different motorcycles will suit different tracks to a degree wherever we go. How do you see the next round?
I think Portimao is a different animal because in Qatar, it always seems difficult for the rider to make a big difference. You're sort of hamstrung a little bit in that you're managing your 22 litres of fuel, so you have to be on the maps that the engineers recommend because you'll run out of fuel if you go aggressive. Likewise with tyre wear. So I think when you go to Portimao, the elevation, it's actually a narrower racetrack, and a rider can dig deep. They can take the bike outside its comfort zone. You know, when you watch a Ducati rider, and watching Mark was the one that really stood out, he looked like he's riding in a skeletrics type way, which Mark never does, you know, keeping everything in line, fast and flowing, but in a controlled manner. And Mark never rides controlled. So I think when you go to the Lexan Portimao, he can take the bike outside of where it's supposed to work, and he can start overriding it. At the minute, he's not. Maybe overriding it won't work with Ducati, but I think you'll see a little bit more of the rider input around such a rolling racetrack as Portimao.
Slightly worrying, Mark out of control on a Ducati at Portimao. I think we've seen some of that before, past history. Michael, it's been a real pleasure talking to you about Qatar. Obviously, hopefully we can catch up with you more and more and more as the year goes on. I mean, I really appreciate you giving us the time on OMG MotoGP. Thanks for joining us, and we wish you all the luck. And of course, you can catch up with Michael later on OMG MotoGP, because we will be talking to him about his own team, about Moto3 and Moto2 as the year progresses. So keep an eye out for that. Subscribe to us if you would, and that will ping up as soon as that drops on OMG MotoGP.
Oh, that was awesome, Keith. I really loved the insight that Michael gave to us from being actually at Qatar. What was your thoughts from the Grand Prix?
I think that I'm going to pick up on the aero and launch control type scenario that we have in MotoGP at the moment. I mean, everybody is beginning to get fed up with it, to be frank with you. Riders, teams, and particularly the fans. I think when we've got a situation where, you know, the racing isn't quite as good, when you've got Moto3, which is always consistently good, you know, you can argue that MotoGP bikes are all within a second now of each other, effectively, over a complete lap. Moto3 is always like that. So it's not about the performance of the bikes or how close they are. It's about whether you can make the passes, whether you can make the opportunity work for you. And in Moto3, you still can, because aero isn't such a major thing. Launch control is not such a major thing. Rah, 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 rah. So it's a situation where we've gone slightly wrong with the rules package. Yeah, World Superbikes is coming of age again, isn't it? World Superbikes is looking really, really good. Phillip Island, you were down at Phillip Island for World Supers, and it was a great race meeting. Some of the, you know, Alex Lowe's passing, you know, Bautista over Lukey Heights. I mean, you know, anybody, it was a little bit special. And we want that back in MotoGP. We've got it in Moto3. We've got it to an extent in Moto2. And we want it back in MotoGP. And I think it is a bone of contention. We've got a rules package that's coming up in 2027. As you heard Michael say, we've got a tyre scenario that's going to change for next year, which may give us a slightly more competitive situation. But we need passing. We need rubbing is racing, you know, to use a NASCAR terminology. Now that we've got Justin Marks in Trackhouse, we'll use rubbing is racing, boy. So we've got to be out, we've got to go rubbing again, I'm afraid. It's got to be that way.
It's so important because obviously with the whole tire pressure rules that are coming in, and now, you know, these Ducati or the European manufacturers are having on their dashboard saying what percentage of the race that they are in and how is the tire going? Do they need to slipstream? Do they not? And it's just all these extra things that are incorporating for the rider where you're right, then there's not the real racing happening anymore. I mean, we saw a little bit with Pedro being his first race, the rookie, and we'll chat a bit more about him. But majority of it, it's all strategic, right?
Well, yeah, the only reason we saw Pedro racing at the level he was racing at and manoeuvring in and out of all the big names was because he hadn't yet got tire management in his head. And that's why he fell away at the end of the race, because his tire management was completely wrong. Qatar is a track that you need tire management and also fuel management. It's a track that uses a lot of fuel. So at the end of the day, Qatar is not representative, I don't think, of the rest of the year. I mean, it's Grand Prix of the year from a rider and a team perspective now, with the facilities that have changed the way they have and so on. And it's a great race to start the beginning of the year with. Biggest crowd that they have, 40,000 people over the entire 3 days. That's four times as much as there used to be. You'd end up with, you know, 5,000 or 6,000 people at trackside maximum back in the day. So Qatar is an emerging market. The amount of money in Qatar is important to the sport. I'm going to dodge the politics side of things and on all the other bits and pieces like human rights. I know it's something that we shouldn't dodge, and it's not that I'm ignoring it, but the point is I want to look at it from a moving forward point of view. Qatari money, that's the reason why we are where we are. We have that at the beginning of the season. We kick off the year because the Qataris are paying for that privilege of starting our season, even though they make no money out of the Grand Prix at all. From a spectator, from a sponsor point of view. You know, is that right or wrong? Well, as the sport is at the moment, we're just going to have to take it as it is. It brings up more questions than we really feel comfortable about. And there are journalists who won't travel to Qatar because of the way it's perceived. I think riders tend to concentrate just on what they're doing, so they're blinkered in what they're doing, and you can understand that as well. But the sports management, Dorna, you know, and the like, really will be acutely aware of the downside of being in bed quite so deep with the likes of Qatar as an opening round. But as I say, that's a story that I said I wasn't going to talk about, and then I did, which is so me, Nita.
I actually thought it was really interesting from a fan's perspective hearing Michael talk about the fact that Qatar is almost a bit more fan-friendly. You can get up close and personal. I guess I get to experience that here with the Australian Grand Prix. It's not a big paddock. It's very small. You see the riders walking around. To hear that at another race when you experience these big European paddocks with the trucks and the hospitality and all that fancy setup, it sounds like it's a bit more relaxed, let's say.
Well, yeah, I think it is relaxed because of the you've probably got more people in the paddock at Misano or Mugello or somewhere like that, an Italian round, than you got standing on the terraces at Qatar, because somehow, despite the fact that Michael was talking about the restriction of tickets and the like as well, you know, somehow there doesn't seem to be that kind of restriction when we get to Misano, because every Italian that's worth his salt has got a free ticket from somewhere. I've never quite worked that one out, but someone will be able to somewhere. I don't know. As we move on, I think that Qatar is not a great example. When we get to Portimao next time, that's going to be a bit more cut and thrust. I mean, I'm looking forward to the likes of Marc Marquez unleashed in the likes of Portimao. I love Portimao. There's a racetrack that was bordering on bankruptcy just a few years ago until the pandemic came and Formula One was looking for tracks, and suddenly Formula One was at Portimao, MotoGP was at Portimao. And luckily, it's kind of saved a group of people and a country, if you like, a fantastic Grand Prix. And long may it last in Portimao. What else came out of Qatar? For me, Rael Fernandez, who was my bold prediction here on ONG MotoGP, Rael Fernandez was there or thereabouts. He had a technical problem on the grid. Stuck his hand in the air and held and delayed the start, and had to start on his number two bike, as it turns out. So it was a significant technical problem. In the end, Trackhouse the new Aprilia team, run by Justin Marks from NASCAR, ended up with just 1 point when I thought Miguel Oliveira and particularly Raul Fernandez looked like they could achieve much more than that in their first Grand Prix. But nevertheless, they'll be thankful for the 1 point, their opening point in the championship in their first ever Grand Prix. And I like Trackhouse and the full-on American livery, I've got to say.
I actually wanted to ask your opinion on Aprilia. Aprilia came into this weekend as being the favourites. I think even Mark said that he expected Aleix to be up the front. And we saw that in the sprint with Aleix. Obviously, he had those rear tyre troubles in the main Grand Prix. But what happened to Aprilia expected to be at the front? Is it just because of these rumours that the bike's going to suit Aleix? Or
I think Aleix and Maverick Viñales were fast at times. I mean, Maverick Viñales was a hot shot from warm-up in the morning and looked like he might well be up for the business. But there's a Kevin Schwantz saying that I love, the American, the delightful American Kevin Schwantz, who reported on one particular rider, I won't mention the name, but he said he's going to come apart like a cheap watch. And that's what happened. You know, you can never really bet on Maverick Viñales coming up with the goods at the moment. He's such a brilliant rider, such a fast rider. In my view, faster than Aleix. Aleix is a screen buyer. He gets hold of it and he gives it some and he gets himself in position. Aleix Espargaró is a good rider, but Maverick Viñales, for me, is just a cut above in the finesse department, but still underperforms. And it's a big disappointment. I really thought that one or both of them were going to be contenders this weekend. I never bet on them because I've bet on them before and I've lost my money. So we'll wait and see. But disappointing.
Definitely. One of the other things that came out from Qatar that I wanted to talk about was chatter. And it's not something that you necessarily hear that much happening anymore, but it seems.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
It was like it was all the European bikes. We're talking about chatter constantly. Pecco said that's why his performance in the sprint wasn't that good. Even watching Marquez come into one of the, I think it might have been a right-hander, you could see the back of the bike. What was happening? Because it doesn't normally happen at Qatar. We didn't hear about it at the test. What was happening this weekend?
Ah, well, you see, there's a big difference between testing and where we are for when we come to racing. And it's the time of day. What happens is you're testing in the sunshine and when the track's absolutely boiling hot, and you've got different grip levels. As you get into the nighttime and the track temperature comes down, you've got more grip in the evening than you do have, you know, in when it's transitioning from sunshine into the evening. So the point being is throughout the race, you're getting more and more grip, which creates chatter. You've not quite dialed it out of the bike. If they'd had more nighttime testing, then they'll have got rid of it by the time we got to the main event. But unfortunately, chatter is the most annoying bloody phenomena. It really is. I mean, effectively, it's just the suspension not being able to cope with what's going on at the in this particular case at the rear end. Sometimes you get chatter at the front. This seems to be more chatter at the rear. But when you've got chatter, you've got a lack of grip because obviously it's not able to kind of grip as you would expect it to or have expected it to in the previous hours of running the bike. So it was a problem. Don't expect it in Portimao. We'll be all right when we get consistent.
Yeah.
And the other thing as well is we were missing sessions. It was wet on the Friday. We had that rain, that thunderstorm and the like that came into Doha, washed all the grip out of the track as well. So the track will have been evolving all the way through the weekend. And that is a suspension man's nightmare to try and get that right.
I heard that the travel was something like $6 million or something, which is crazy, right? Anyway, I'm not going to get into that, but what I did want to talk about was the fact that Pecco said that he was struggling with this. You know, that's why I was so surprised to not see him up on the podium for the sprint race. Then morning warm-up. Sorry, well,
the sprint race is a, pardon the phrase, is a balls out session, isn't it? There's no time management, no fuel management. It is just throw everything at it, which is what we kind of like about the sprint race. I'm not sure everybody likes it. I think the teams. It's always a bit of a nerve-wracking experience, the first sprint race of the year. But when we get to the main race and we're into management, I mean, Pecco Bagnaia was immaculate. He rode that race, really. He was an artist. It's annoying. I just want to see a flat-out race with everybody, you know, making it happen. Pedro Acosta was stunningly exciting, as we expected him to be, but he ran out of tyres because he was stunningly exciting. You know, it was quite funny seeing him stick one over Mar Marquez, you know, like sport youngsters.
Flashbacks from Qatar 2013 where Mark did the same thing the inside of Valentino and it was like, oh, what's happening?
Yeah, and look how that turned out in the end. So we can only hope that we have the same kind of rivalry between Pedro Acosta and hopefully Mar Marquez, if Mar Marquez hits the kind of form that we expect him to this year. Oh, yeah, it's quite funny. The amount of people that bet on Mark Marquez winning in Qatar, I'd have been astounded if that. I think that his positioning in the end, was really good. I think he, crew chief Frankie Carchetti, you hear us talk about Frankie a lot. They put together a good, solid program for the opening race of the year. Brad Binder was there where we wanted him to be, right in the hunt. KTM. Are there or thereabouts, but he seems to be the man that's risen above everything that's happening at KTM at the moment. And Binder, again, if you've not seen the interview that went out on OMG MotoGP, there is one in our timeline, so check it out. Brad Binder, prior to the weekend, spoke with us. I think Binder's going to be a fly in the Ducati ointment during the course of this year. I've got a feeling that he's definitely got the mentality for it. KTM are really moving. Yeah, as he has said, they've made a big step in all departments, albeit that everyone else has made quite a big step as well. So it's going to be interesting to see whether they can just fine tune that, just get that extra out of the motorbike when we get to the more traditional racetracks that they'll be racing on. Like I say, Qatar is an odd one. It's at night. Conditions were not perfect. There was a lot of dust and dirt around. If you remember back in the test, that you know the place wasn't usable for the first day. There was so much sand on the track. So I don't think we've seen anywhere near like the full potential of most of these motorbikes yet, or riders.
Yeah, exactly. Look, the race wasn't exciting. It wasn't thrilling, apart from Pedro, like we said. But what I did want to talk about was the consistency. Pecco Bagnaia. Consistent with those lap times. If you look at his race pace, once he got out the front, constantly 152, 152, and you could just tell that he was like, I'm just going to bank this down and I'm going to go for it. And the same with Brad Binder, like you're talking about, is he understands that bike now. They've made that step in the direction. He's okay, tire conservation, I know how to handle that. I can keep putting that pressure on Pecco. Pecco didn't get that far ahead of Brad even by the end of the race distance, did he?
No, but he was managing the whole thing from the lights out. And that was the fact of that. He put a big effort in to get out front early. That takes, you know, you got to be on it to make that move, to get yourself in front and manage the race from the front with a full tank of fuel. They will have done full tank run, probably one, but he's got the experience. I just think it was immaculate. And that's how you win titles. That is how, you know, if he wins a third title this year, and you've got to say, with that performance of the weekend, you know, fully fit, Jorge Martin is still the man that's going to take it to him. But again, Jorge Martin's style, perhaps he uses a little bit more of the motorbike than, or tyre particularly, than Pecco does. Brad Binder was renowned for being able to sort of, even though I've spoken to him about it, about he's got an aggressive looking style, but it's actually quite smooth on the bike. So he's got a motorbike at the end of a race as well. It's going to be interesting to see whether anybody can match the likes of Pecco Bagnaia. Portimao is going to be, it's like a motocross track. Yeah, Portimao is, it's a bike race's you know, absolute paradise. You've got Phillip Island, Portimao, Mugello. They've got certain corners in them where you have just, you've got so much fun on the thing to make it work. And we'll see what comes out when we get to Portimao. I'm really looking forward to Portimao. I don't think we're going to have quite the lack of cut and thrust that we had at the weekend. I think that is really part of Qatar's makeup, that they've got to manage motorcycles. You know, they were miles off the pace, really, through probably two-thirds of that race, which surprised even me. We were expecting it, but it was quite a long way off of what those bikes were potentially capable of doing, which, again, is why we had the Acosta factor. He was right there in it and sticking out the inside and doing what he does, but then he ran out of motorbike, which is what he's going to do. But when we get to Portimao, that ain't going to be the case, I don't think.
Oh, no, I'm so excited to see Pedro Acosta at Portimao. One thing that I did find really interesting in the post-race debrief, though, Jorge Martin said he still doesn't feel completely comfortable on the GP24. And you could kind of see that in his riding style, right? He's there, but he's not there.
24 bike. This is an old, you know, from an old racer point of view, and you don't get any older than me, is that when you get your first factory bike, you know, you think, I've got my factory bike. I've got the full on, you know, it's the dog's what's-its. And suddenly you get on it and you go, ooh, crikey, this ain't quite what I was expecting, because it is a cutting edge brand new motorcycle that has nuances that need to be dialed in. You need to work out how that motorbike is best going to, it's going to be the best bike because the factory are behind it. They've made the modifications. Chances are, what you've got is the likes of Marquez and the rest of them that are on motorbikes that are a year old. They've got the data. Yeah, they've got all the information they need when they get to these early rounds. But by the time we get to rounds 3, 4, 5, the 24 bikes are suddenly going to be coming into their own because suddenly they've got the data. The data guys have downloaded everything they need. They've made the comparisons with everyone else that's running 24 bikes. And so they will be finding their legs later in the season, and the older bikes will perhaps be falling behind. You know, everybody says how much better the bike is, but they haven't quite got the parameters worked out perfectly just yet. It will come though. I looked down when we were talking about Acosta a minute ago. I loved the quote that he gave. I think it was to TNT, to the old BT model. Just put your balls on and go. Now that is a phrase worthy of one of the best phrases from MotoGP over the years, I feel. And I think that kind of indicates where we might be going with young Acosta.
he's not shy to speak his mind, is he? Which is exciting. They're calling him like Valentino used to be when he was younger, and he's exciting in the press conferences and in the interviews, and it's not cookie cutter, boring. He's definitely going to tell it how it is, I think.
I think also, sorry, I must have sort of disjointed this, but I ought to mention Trackhouse as well. They got their 1 point, but one of the reasons why Miguel Oliveira was a bit behind is he had to do a long lap penalty that he'd inherited from before. So Oliveira had a long lap penalty in the middle of there, which pretty much kills your race if you've not got the tow from the main men at the end of the day. So that's another reason why there was only a point for Trackhouse this weekend.
Yeah, no, definitely not the start that Miguel was wanting to his 2024 season. But hopefully, as he does go to Portimao next month. Oh, it's all blending in. The next round, anyway. hopefully, his Portimao 2024 race is a lot better than his 2023.
Yeah, I mean, you want... The thing about the start of a season that's as long as this, 42 rounds... 21 of them scoring full points, half of them scoring half points, obviously, for the sprint races. But you do not need injury. You know, the Franco Morbidelli at the moment is suffering again at the beginning of the year with an injury. It's just, you know, a disaster. When you've got rounds that come thick and fast like they do, you know, by the time, in fact, the Grand Prix at the weekend at Qatar was the first time since the beginning of last year that we had a full grid. Yeah, there was not a grid full of the full-on, you know, entry list for a year since we last had a full grid because of injury, because of the amount of riders that were taken out during the course of the year. So that will have a major effect on the championship by the end of the year, which is another reason why the Pecco Bagnaia's of the world that gave that control. I've been guilty of not considering Pecco Bagnaia as an alien. A phrase that we've, it's an old-fashioned phrase really now, that it's a motorcycle racer that's doing something that even the top-line motorcycle racers go, how's he doing that? You know, it's a kind of, that's an alien. It's somebody that does something on a motorbike that you just can't recognize, even as a fellow motorcycle racer. I've been guilty of saying that there aren't really any aliens anymore because everybody's virtually the same, doing the same thing. Maybe that's aero, maybe that's launch control, all these other devices that they've got now that's ground that out of the system, if you like. But Pecco Bagnaia's way of riding a motorbike this weekend, if that continues, that may be the new generation of alien. It's the guy that's able to control himself in the circumstances that these new devices are making you work like, how you have to be on a motorbike now to get the best from it. Maybe it's not the guy that's, you know, got the front end tucked and the rear end hanging out and you know, tank slapping his way all the way down the front straight. It's a different style of motorbike racing. And maybe Pecco Bagnaia is an alien. It's just different.
I mean, this year's going to tell if he can take that third consecutive title. Are we going to see Professor Pecco back on top? Is this the new way to ride MotoGP? Time's only going to tell, right?
Yeah, the contrast is Marc Marquez. It's going to be. It was interesting to see Marc. You would have said that Marc was a little subdued at the weekend, but I think he's still getting the swing of that Ducati. Yeah, testing is testing. We're now in our first race. You know, longer distances, difficult track. You know, dark. You know, under floodlights, so on and so forth. I thought Marc was quite subdued. Marc in the past would have been, you know, hanging the thing out. You know, crashing at every single corner. And finishing on the podium. I think he was well within a podium. I think there was a podium within him, should he have wanted to push even harder. But I think he definitely looked to me like a man that was using a bit of discretion. Can't believe I just said that in the same sentence as Marc Marquez. But the point being is that is going to come well as this season moves on. It's just a question of whether the 2024 bikes just move away from him a little bit as the season progresses. I think nuance is the word. We didn't get the races we were expecting. They weren't exciting in MotoGP. But I think analysing everybody and looking at the timesheets, excuse me, breakfast, it's one of those situations where I think we've got a lot to look forward to. I don't think it's going to be dull all year long. I think that you know, we'd be wrong to hang the series out to dry just because of the Qatar procession.
Oh, definitely. And I completely agree. Back to the Marc Marquez point, you know, you mentioned Frankie Carchetti. He said it's going to take Marc multiple races to completely understand this Ducati. Watching him over the weekend in the practice and the qualifying sessions, you can tell he is really trying to change his riding style a lot as well to suit that bike. And there were some parts of the track that he was fastest out of everybody, you know, so things are starting to click. But yeah, it is going to take him time. Are we going to see him closer to the front in Portimao? Maybe. But are we going to see some of the others like an A. Bastianini closer to the front in Portimao?
Yeah, Bastianini had a bit of a disappointing. I was expecting Bastianini to be more there or thereabouts for this one because he's always gone good at Qatar before. I think Marc, I'm sorry to keep bringing back old things, but I still question Marc's arm, you know. We'll wait and see. He's developing a style for Ducati and a style for himself based on the way that he feels on the Ducati. And those two things are connected fairly, you know, substantially. So I think Marc is still on that voyage of discovery. He's got the right guy alongside him. Carchetti is going to look after him in the way that he did with Digi and Antonio. You know, Digi suddenly had a completely different setup to everyone else in Ducati because him and Carchetti decided that, okay, let's chuck the form book and the setup book out the window and go where we feel we ought to be going. And Marc will be doing the same thing. You know, we've talked about the changes in team personnel. You know, you got to remember that that's a major issue for Marc Marquez. He's not got Santi Hernandez alongside him like he had at Repsol Honda for all those years. Santi Hernandez was like a brother. Those two were joined at the hip. They understood every little, you know, glance or raise of the eyebrow or whatever it might be. There was this kind of communication between them. And Frankie and Mark working this out still. You know, and then there's the wider implication of the Grassini team, which is probably a slightly less harsh environment. Then there's the other dynamic of Alex Marquez, who is a fast runner at Grassini and a world champion previously, and he's finding his own feet. And the number 73 might be putting pressure on the number 93 in the same team. So there's a lot of things, a lot of plates spinning in Grassini at the minute. Good team, though, to have around you in those circumstances. I think pastoral care, I think they probably got that one fairly well covered. It seemed funny seeing Julia Marquez, the dad, in the back of the Grassini camp, I've got to say, and the change of colours. That was the other thing that was quite interesting this year. The liveries for the first time under the lights at Qatar always looked that bit more spectacular.
One of the Ducati riders that I was really surprised at being so far down the line was Marco Bezzecchi. Considering last year, you know, he was up there, but keep hearing the same thing. He's not gelling that well with the bike.
Well, I think loyalty to the VR46 organization, to Valentino Rossi, may have been slightly misplaced. I think he really probably needed to have moved on. We'll see how that develops as the course of the year goes on. Yeah. You know, Bezzecchi had a great finish the last year, and I felt that he was on the move, but he didn't. He stayed in the end, and that's loyalty to the team. Sometimes you've got to be a bit more, what's the word I'm looking for, ruthless when it comes to your career. And maybe he will regret perhaps staying where he stayed. We'll wait and see as that kind of evolves during this coming year. But I mean, at the end of the day, MotoGP, probably more questions than answers there at the moment. I don't think we can really take too much, apart from Pecco, I don't think we can take too much out of what happened in Qatar and transpose it to coming rounds. I think that Bagnaia was the master for me in a weekend of interesting results. I mean, if you go to Moto3 and Moto2, I mean, again, the Colombian national anthem, we're getting quite used to that. And the Boscos Guro chassis in Moto2, pretty good as well. And Barry Baltus, I mean, there's a lovely story behind that. Barry Baltus, Barry was named, you know, his dad was a big Barry Sheen fan. So, you know, sadly, Barry Sheen died before Barry Baltus was born. I mean, Barry Baltus is 19. Barry Sheen died 21 years ago on the day that Barry Baltus got his first ever podium in Grand Prix, which is I love that kind of synergy. That really is a little bit special. And of course, Father Baltus will be more than happy to have Barry's namesake on the podium for the first time. I can imagine there would have been a bit of a celebration going on there.
Oh, definitely. There's such a lovely, like, heartwarming story to hear. You know, this young up-and-coming rider get on the podium, the ode to Barry Sheen, which is really close to me and my family as well. So that was so nice. I loved it. But talk about, like, hectic with Moto3, the amount of crashes in that race. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
If there was no action in MotoGP, Moto3 just had all of it.
Yeah, I mean, it's... The one thing about the track at Qatar, I thought this year as well, we didn't get long lap penalties for track, you know, exceeding track limits. We had some proper racing this weekend from a track limits point of view, which I am so pleased to have seen. Now, the way they've done it, obviously the curbs, you talked about chatter a bit earlier on. There's nothing like chatter when you're on your high part of the curb, because at Qatar, that is some teeth shattering chatter, I can tell you. So, of course, if you go over the top and out the other side, and there was a couple of crashes in Moto3 where they did slip off the edge of the curb, that can be disastrous as well. But basically, it's self-penalizing. So at the end of the day, Qatar have got the track quite good from that point of view. If you go on the green, you're likely to get a penalty. But of course, what they've done is they've designed the curbs and the track. The curbs are much wider with an increasing gradient of chatter, of grade in the Misano curbs, serration, whatever you want to call it. And so it does naturally slow you down. There is no advantage being right out there. And I think we ought to see more of that as tracks evolve. We've done a piece from the Driven guys, if you remember, the track designers, that we've spoken to here on OMG MotoGP before that take all that into account. But at the end of the day, it's the tracks that kind of dictate how they want it to be. And if we're racing on the same tracks as Formula One, we can't always have what we want as motorcycle racers. There's always that compromise that's being made there. But I thought Qatar made a really good job of providing a racetrack that didn't provide us with a heap of penalties just because somebody nicked 3 millimeters of green paint. So that was something to cheer.
I completely agree. When I heard Simon Crafar talking about it over the broadcast, and finally we're not going to have someone literally just touching the green and then, oh my God, here's another penalty or here's a long lap or whatever happens. So no, I agree. I think they've done a really good job with the facilities there, the track, the broadcast, everything I thought was really, really good. But I think that just about sums up. Oh, sorry, what were you going to say?
Well, we've got, hang on a minute, you're going to be in the deep end here if you don't bring up Jake Dixon.
Oh, I am so sorry.
Because he's damn near family for the Vermeulens, that's for sure.
Yes, well. I completely forgot. What a horrible weekend for Jake, huh?
Yeah, I mean, Jake Dixon is really the great British hope. Sorry if you're watching this from elsewhere and you support riders from other countries around the world, but Jake Dixon, from a British perspective, is really our great hope for the future, and a real disaster for him. And he, I mean, I was sitting with a load of people at home here, and they kind of don't even flinch. Yeah, you know, whoa, look at that, he's flying through the air. They have no clue how much that hurts when you land at that speed from that high in that situation. And despite the fact Jake was declared as nothing broken and all the rest of it, he was still declared unfit. To be declared unfit at Grand Prix is quite a big deal, because you have got to be hurting really badly if you haven't broken anything to not be declared fit. And you know Jake would have had a go if they'd allowed him to have ridden. But Jake's, again, started the season just where he could do without starting it. And from British fans' point of view, we wish you well, Jake, and hope that all is cool for Portimao, because you will be spectacular there.
Oh, it's going to suit him so much, that track. I can't wait. Okay, any more Moto2 that we need to talk about, Keith?
No, I think the Jake Dixon thing, I thought I'm going to dig you out of that particular hole.
Thank you. I should have said I completely forgot, but no, thank you for that. But yes, I'm pretty sure that sums up our Qatar Grand Prix. MotoGP race wasn't that exciting. Pedro Acosta put a little jazz in there for us. But other than that, think that sums it up. Let's head to Portimao. Let's head to the roller coaster, as they call it. As usual, guys, if you want to like and subscribe to this podcast, please feel free to do it. Comment down below. We want to hear from you as well. Or feel free to send us an email. All that info is going to be in the info. But as always, Keith, thank you so much for chatting with me. I love talking all about MotoGP with you.
And we'll catch up next time. Looking forward to it.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. Bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.